Hello, all my beautiful cinnabar moths or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to The Writer's Triangle, a podcast about publishing and all things books. And today we're going to be talking about something that I think is super interesting because of the level of diversity that's involved in it, and that is publishing platforms. And what a publishing platforms is like Ingram Sparks, KDP, OneDrive, all of those are different publishing platforms. So basically it can be Printing Plus, any place that you can take your book to then publish it or print it and then get it distributed is what I mean when I'm talking about publishing platforms. I was looking around and I didn't really see any discussion in the publishing space about how to pick the best one for you without it being like a super deep dive, like what you need to know before you do the deep dive kind of thing. But I did come across a really cool YouTube video that does like a tier linking of them by Paper Tiger, and I'm going to put that down in the link. So I'm not going to do a one by one analysis, but rather general things that you should be considering for yourself as an author or an indie press, things that you need to be aware of that could hinder the progress of your press and also hurt the distribution or searchability of your book. And that is where I want to start, is discoverability. What is the discoverability for the platform? So if you're looking like at Kindle or Ingram Sparks or Lula or any of those, is there a way that when you go onto their website, if you are an indie bookstore or a big book chain, how would they discover your book if they went onto the website? And I advise just looking for a book on the website yourself and looking at how would you find your book, because that's how booksellers find books. They go to the publishing platforms and they look through books if they're looking in the sci-fi section, if they're looking in the YA section. And that's another part of discoverability is what are the genres and how fine are the genres broken down? And for me, a really great breakdown is to see if they include new adult. If they have a new adult section, then you know that they usually have a really great age breakdown that's really refined so that authors can really look for what their demographic is, right? And also bookstores can and retailers can look for if there's holes in their demographic. Because if you're a bookstore owner and you're going and you're looking on site, you notice that, you know, sci-fi is really selling in your store, then you're going to want to have more sci-fi and you're going to want to have some of those funnier things. Like, do they have a listing for like sapphic sci-fi or space opera, or is it just LGBTQIA+? Looking at those genres, and are those subgenres broken down? Because LGBTQIA+ is a huge umbrella, and we do have books from our press that have, you know, intersex, trans, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and non-binary characters in that one book. And so they really fill out a lot of what the LGBTQIA+ stands for. But not every book has that level of LGBTQIA+ representation in it. And I think knowing if it's going to be bisexual, for example, is it going to be gay bisexual or lesbian bisexual? And what type of bisexuality is going to be represented can be really important. I know for us, we have two books with bisexual characters. One is an assigned male at birth. One is assigned female at birth. And they're both cisgendered and bisexual. So I think those kinds of, if you want that level, if that's the level that you're writing at in terms of the diversity in your book, then being able to know, does your distributor have that level of refined search options so that your book's discoverability will be raised? Because the finer details that we can get in our genre discussions and in our genre selections is going to increase the discoverability for your audience for your book. And that means all of the retailers that can, you know, access it and that are shopping these different platforms to decide which books to carry and which books to celebrate. And when you're looking at the difference between like Barnes & Noble and KDP, really look at what are they doing in terms of supporting you once you go with their platform. Look to see, is there an exclusivity clause? Because if you're being exclusive with a specific platform, that means you cannot sell that book on any other platform for the lifetime of that contract. And also look at, you know, like I've talked about in the past, look to see if they're setting the prices for your book. And I do think that having a platform that is going to give you some idea of what you should be charging for your book is really important, especially when you're new to the game and you're trying to figure out how to sell your book, because there's such a wide range of choices. Some authors are giving their books away for free, and other authors are charging at the highest end for their book. And that's about your comfort level with what you want to do. We have a marketing team that does research for us that goes beyond what our platforms tell us to know within the range, where does this particular book fall. And it goes into, like, is it part of a series, is something we consider when setting cost or price of the book, and also cost of making the book and return on investment. I think I'd do a different video about how to price your books, because I could talk for hours about that. So having a platform that's going to give you a little bit of guidance on that, I think, is really important. And the cost for setup. I think Lulu and Ingram and Digital to Digital, I don't think they have any setup cost anymore, but I'm not sure. Don't trust me on that. I'm putting links down to about 10 or 11 platforms that I'm aware of. There are hundreds of platforms out there. These are not picked based on any favoritisms. They're just picked based on my familiarity with what happens when I go and I sit and listen and attend conferences. These are how things come on my radar, and also talking with our authors, their own experiences. These are how the different platforms are known to me, and our own discovery process when we were deciding what platforms we were going to use as a press. And so I apologize for the limit of it, that I'm not able to do hundreds, but I do think this 10 or 11 that I'm doing down, that are listed down in the description, are a great starting place for you to do your research and get an understanding of what it is you want and what it is you don't want when you're publishing your book. And so, in addition to cost, you need to think about the setup process. How many templates do they require? Is there a different, there's usually going to be a different template for ebook, audiobook, paperback, and hardback. The reason that there's going to be a different cover for each is because the trim size of each is different. And with audiobooks specifically, the audiobooks platforms do require a square cover, which is different than the more it's the longer square. So there's different shapes and different sizes. I think it is rectangle. Yeah, I was confusing rectangle and triangle. Thank you, dyslexia, present of the day. So it's very interesting being in publishing and being dyslexic. It is rectangle that I'm thinking of, and I always confuse those two. So the square versus the rectangular, the elongated form of a paperback or a hardback is different than the square. And I think there's a little bit of difference in the ebook trim size, although it is the same size as a soft cover, usually the soft cover of a book. And the size of the cover is, the trim size is based on what is the actual measurements of the book, and that's impacted by page count. And then you have the box size of the book, and the box size of the book is how many books will fit inside a box, the standard box for whatever box size they use for shipping books. So looking into, do they have, in the cost and in the setup process, how friendly is the setup process to you? How much research are you having, do you need to do to understand what their setup process is? Like I was just talking about cover, trim, and box size. Are they providing definitions for those types of things? Or are they expecting you to come in already knowing the jargonese of publishing? And I think some of the companies do expect a lot of experience with the jargonese of what it takes to set up a book, and others are more accessible. I don't know in 2023 which ones are more accessible than the others, and that's why if I was looking at a Paper Tigers video that I've linked down in the description to get more of that platform by platform breakdown on those types of things, a deeper dive. I think another big thing is looking at the types of reports available. What are they reporting on? And I know that some places with reports, and also frequency of reports, are they reporting on how many of your books are sold? Are they reporting on how your books are doing? Do they provide a daily breakdown, weekly breakdown, monthly breakdown of the sales of your book? Do they give regional breakdown for the sales of your books? Do they give information on the different formats of your books? Some places just give sales. They don't do ebook versus paperback versus hardback. Others do give for each different type of formatting of the book, whether it be audio, ebook, paper, whatever it is, what it sold, how many quantities it sold, what region of the world it's sold in, and are you wanting that level of information? Just because some provide these really deep dive reports, it may not be what you're wanting. And so really look at yourself and respect yourself and your own boundaries and your own energy, because it's great to have the information if you're going to use it. If you're not going to use the information, if it's not valuable for you, like for me, I don't find daily reporting of book sales to be beneficial for our press, because no one is checking sales every day. We have other things that we're doing. And I worry that if we were involved with, I think we could sign up for daily reports if we wanted to. I don't know. I just feel like for me, that's got to be a rough way to go, I would think, energy-wise. And I'm super protective of my energy and my positivity. I think if I was looking at the sales on a daily basis, that would be so disheartening. And I look at the sales, to be honest, we don't look at the sales for every book, every day, or every week. We don't even do it every month. The sales that we track, our sales reports, there is a 3-month lag time on the reports that we get. And so we don't have any real-time sales information, because we also don't have the ability to change the market or react in that way. Because I don't really, and anyone who says they would know what to do based on a specific sale, based on a specific day's report, I'm not thinking so. Because what if it was just that one day and it's not the next day, and then you make all of these changes and those changes cost you the day after? So I don't really value day to day, but again, that is a deeply personal choice. Another thing to consider that's super, super important that will completely wreck your life if you don't pay attention to it is, what country are they set up in, and what are the tax laws and implications and regulations in the country that they're set up in. So for us, we do have distribution globally, and the tax laws are regionally different. The tax laws that we go on, that we work with, the two countries I'm most familiar with on a personal level are Japan and the United States. And the tax laws are night and day in terms of reporting for the business. And each country that we report in for the business affects every other country's report, because we are a global company. We are doing global taxes. And so we're filing our taxes in multiple regions. And you need to know what is specifically, if you're doing it outside of your country of origin or your country of residence, it's important to know what is the number for exemption. There, every country has, if you make less than this amount of money, you're exempt from filing taxes. So look into that country's tax laws and regulations, and also look into their copyright laws. So we distribute in China, and we know that because we've made the choice to distribute in China, their copyright laws are very, very different than the copyright laws in the United States and Japan, and we understand that for us, it means that there'll be some violation. But because they're one of the top three markets in the world, we view like the risk for benefit, you know, the risk reward is worth it for us. You have to ask yourself, is the possibility of your book being bootlegged, does that prevent you from wanting to go into regions of the world that have laxer copyright laws? And if that's the case, that you don't want your book distributed in certain countries or certain regions, then looking at the platform and seeing, does that platform allow you to make those kinds of restrictions? Because some platforms have global distribution, and that's just their distribution. And you can't have any say over where your book's distributed. And I think it's a personal choice. Like for us risking, you know, we don't want our books being bootlegged. And we have the reason that we're not as strict is because we do have a dedicated person who searches every day for bootleg copies. And we also have automated systems that are out on the internet, scouring the internet to find bootleg copies or illegal copies of our books. And we're able to shut them down because we have the backing of a company. And that sort of gives us a different relationship when we're asking for things to be taken down or when we're saying this is a copyright violation. And because we have a legal team, we already have the legalese for that. It's a standard form that we have that we put out that is specific to us, or I would share it with you. And I'm sorry for that, because it does have to be modified for region. And I apologize that I can't just give you, because if there was just one standard, I would be able to give that to you. But it really depends on what type of bootleg it is, where you found the bootleg, and who's the person bootlegging it. Is it a company that's doing it? Is it an individual, or is it a website? And there are a lot of websites out there, shady websites, that won't even have bootlegged the book, that will just have a couple of sentences from the book, to use that to get people to come in and buy the book. And anytime one of our books wins an award or gets an honorable mention, we immediately see an increase in those types of behaviors, or gets a positive review on a big platform like YA Central or something like that. Then we know that, okay, if the Forge review comes out, we know, okay, we're going to have to do the work to really be vigilant for about the next 30 days to make sure that this one specific book is not being bootlegged. And if you're distributing globally, that's something that you're going to have to be mindful that you need to do globally. And it is a different process for each country, because the World Wide Web, the internet, is not the same everywhere. So you do have to look at it through the lens of other countries. And Amazon.co, that's in the United States, Amazon.jp, that's in Japan, and looking at the different filters doing the different countries, and it can be quite exhausting, to be honest. And I'm so happy that it's not my job to do that for the company. And I really appreciate the team that stays on top of it. They do a wonderful job protecting our authors and protecting the press. And there are days, if you see us on Twitter, and there are days that I'm tweeting about it, it's because I've had it officially with just the number of times that we're having it. And Gracie and Zeus Live the Dream, that book, for some reason, we know it's an award-winning book for one, and it's an awesome book. And that book, people just want to bootleg that book so much. And I feel really sad, because Elizabeth is such an amazing human and such an amazing author. If you want to support this author and you like their book, buy a copy of their book. Don't buy bootleg copies. You're hurting authors. You're hurting authors more than you're hurting presses when you buy that and steal their art. So that's the book that we get a hit about once a week for Sally, for Gracie and Zeus Live the Dream. So if you're listening to us and you've bootlegged any of our books, stop it. And we're very vigilant, and knock on wood, we don't think any copies have slipped through the net or been significant, because we know that that book in particular is for some reason really popular with bootleggers. So when you have your book catalog and you've published a couple of books, you will get to know the personality and the public's relationship with your books, and know if global distribution is for you, if you want to put the time and energy and work, there are pros and cons to global distribution. I think I'll do a separate podcast on that, because I think that's a whole can of worms all on its own, and I don't want to be on the mic for hours and hours and talking about it and doing my woe is me. But the main thing beyond, you know, bootlegging copyright is make sure that you understand the regional laws and tax implications. Please, please, please pay your taxes. And please, please, please file your taxes in any country that you have to file your taxes. And most of the distributors, they'll ask for, you'll be required to have a tax ID. If you're required to have a tax ID, then you are definitely identifying yourself in that region as somebody who their tax revenue services will be aware of. And these platforms, they have to do their own accounting and their own taxes. So they will be reporting, and they will be using your tax ID to report, not to report you specifically, but to report their own earnings and their own income. Another thing to be really aware of are, what are the royalties going to be? And this is where I think comparison shopping becomes super important, because there are royalties for some places. I'm surprised. I've heard tell that some places are as low as 15% to the author in some regions. And I've also heard that for some vanity presses, authors are paying and not getting royalties. If you're getting zero royalties or 15% royalties, that is predatory. Don't stand for that. Immediately book it the other direction from whoever's telling you that you need to pay to publish your book, or is telling you that you're getting less than 50% royalties on your book when you're looking at platforms. I think the standard in platforms right now, I want to say in 2023, is between 75 and 80%, with 75 to 80% going to the author and 25 to 20% going to the platform, and that may change over time. And I find what affects the split is whether or not there are any setup fees. When there are setup fees, you tend to get a higher split of the royalty, and the royalty is when they sell the book to someone. I'm going to do an episode on book sales, and that'll cover royalties. When they sell the book, then that's the royalty. And it is just about looking at the entire package and considering what the percentages are and if that works for you, and if that's going to work for your budget and your lifestyle and give you everything. So look at the complete package, not just one aspect of it, and see which one is the total package for you and what's going to keep you feeling the most positive and optimistic. And one thing for me that I was really kind of shocked about is the variant in customer service. A lot of platforms these days don't have a phone number. And I don't know why I find this odd. I have another business that I run. I'm a therapist. I have a therapy practice, and I don't have a phone number because I don't do on-call therapy, and I only book appointments via email. So you would think that I would be like, as a press owner, I would totally understand when they don't have a phone number. But I was just, I don't know. Because for me, with the reason that I don't have a phone number as a therapist is because when I'm in session, I'm in session. You can't call and leave a message. And the way my session flow goes, I might not be able to get back to you in 24 hours. It's much faster for me to check emails in between sessions than it is for me to answer a phone call, because it's not interactive, right? I can just read it and get on and boogie with my day. And I think that a lot of these places also have that same instance. And the various platforms that we use, y'all know that we do Amazon, there's no number to call. It's all by email. And it can take us 2 or 3 weeks to resolve an issue. And we don't find that to be stressful or worrisome, because we're doing our setup you know, at least 4 months, in a perfect world, 6 months before the book comes out. Sometimes things happen and we're under the wire and we're at the 3 month mark when we're doing that. We try to avoid that. But because we give ourselves that lead time, the purpose for that is to work out any kinks in the getting it launched, and having the launch date. And that's something to look at with the different platforms. I know Amazon doesn't do pre-launch. And so with Amazon, where we have our printer and our distributors that then do Amazon. And then once the book is launched, we let Amazon print. So for us, having that lead time, having that pre-launch time, having that pre-sale time, having that pre-order time is really important to us. And looking at, do they allow that? And will that give you pre-launch time? Because we really enjoy putting out bonus content, creating a buzz, and getting some, and also having, you know, some ARC reviews on up and on Goodreads before the launch date of the book to have people really excited about it. That's another thing to consider. And also the ability to offer specials and giveaways. What something interesting that I found is that to put a box set together of your book, of your physical book, is really, really difficult to do. And I know that for audiobooks, you can do a box set by putting your entire audiobook together and then just putting the covers in between the different books as they end and having them as one continuous book. We are able to send out box set as promotional materials, but we haven't been able to do this distribution where we're doing box sets where you can buy a box set that's pre-made and available on through various retailers. And if you can find a platform that is going to do those box sets for you, they're absolutely worth their weight in gold. We do know some that do, but the way that they would do it and the level of control that we would like to have over it, there's a disconnect and a mismatch in the industry. And that's why we've kind of held off on that. Instead, we just go ahead, make our own boxes and send them out to our PR team and let everybody on the PR list enjoy that box experience. And some box companies do sell our books and include them in their boxes, but doing like a box set for a trilogy or something, I think that really is at the highest level. And usually those have the lowest royalties. So looking at what's more valuable to you is going to be so important. And for us, royalties matter a little bit more than putting together a trilogy box and having it on Amazon. Doing specials and giveaways on Amazon, you can do it, but be aware that on Amazon specifically, you have to do it for 30 days. Barnes & Noble is a little bit trickier. The way that we negotiated our deal with Barnes & Noble is that we're not we're not able to go in and do something different than what the corporation Barnes & Noble wants to do, the same with Walmart. And the reason that we did it is because we have a business agreement with them. We're not doing an individual agreement with them. And I think if you go in as an individual, and I think that you'll have more wiggle room because we do give them permission to do certain things with our books. And that has them buy more of our books. And we're purely in a volume business. So anything we can do that increases the volume of books that we sell and the willingness of retailers to put our books in their stores and put our books on their websites, that's our primary focus. And I don't think that has to be your focus as an indie author or your focus as a press. Presentation matters, and feeling good about the way you're presenting and feeling positively about your relationship with your platform and your distribution and feeling good and feeling like, yes, this is how I want my art represented in the world. That should be the thing that you lead with. We're a business and we love every single one of our books and they're all our little babies, but not as much as it is for an author. And any author we sign, we do talk to them about our marketing plan and we do talk about what we will and won't do for the book. so that they can know, are we the full fantasy? Because it may be that we're not the full fantasy because we're not going to do something that, that they would do on their own. And you know, that is completely okay. Because at the end of the day, as an author, you need to feel as confidently as you can that you represented yourself in the best way that's going to make you happiest. And yeah, so when you're looking at different platforms, and there'll be all kinds of resources linked down in the description, please check those out. And remember, your happiness matters as an author, and your choices are just that, your choices. I want to thank all of our beautiful Cinnabar Moths for listening. And you don't have to be a moth. You can even be a butterfly, but I'm not Mariah Carey. I'm not trying to bite her rhyme. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.